For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation, to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. Shalom, and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions in Hickson, Tennessee. Now here's your host, IBJM Ministries Director, John Lawrence.
Greetings, friends, and thank you so much for listening in today. I am John Lawrence, IBJM Director of Ministries, and your host for the program. I wanted to talk with you about some of our missionaries today, particularly those on deputation, but also some of our veteran workers who are in need of more support, and they are available for meetings in your church if you would like to have them. Joey and Leah Clapp just returned from nearly 2 years in the Ukraine studying the Russian language and culture there. They had to leave a bit early because of the recent turmoil in that country, which has been ongoing for some months now. Their ministry will be to Russian Jews, 600,000 strong, in New York City, and they'll be working with the Gibson family planting Shalom Baptist Church in the borough of Queens. But right now, they are in need of more meetings and more support before they will be able to leave for their field. So you pray for them and think about perhaps inviting them, if you'd like, to your church to share their ministry. Rachel Hughes is a single woman with experience in education and teaching, and she's going to the Ukraine, hopefully, once the situation is calmed there a bit. But she, too, needs some additional support before she'll be ready to go. She will be assisting our church planting team there, but will also have a ministry with children in the orphanages and perhaps teaching English as a second language as a means to reach young people and even adults. Rachel's hoping to leave for the field by the end of this year, and she's at about 65% of her support right now. And then we have Tom and Laura Ebert. They're up there in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in the North Country, planting Shalom Baptist Church in the area of Mequon, which is a suburb of the city, where there are about 32,000 Jewish people. They planted the church more than 2 years ago now, and the work is doing very well as they look for a permanent place to meet. Brother Ebert is not at full support right now and is available for meetings to share his ministry, an exciting church plant there in that city. It's a thriving work in a needy urban area and certainly worthy of your support. Jerry and Aaron Dumoulin recently launched Discovery Baptist Church on Easter Sunday, a little over a month ago, and that's in the city of Kiryas Joel, New York, an interesting community of about 15,000 people. No Bible-believing church there at all that we know of, and one-third of this town are ultra-Orthodox Hasidic Jewish people who very much need a gospel witness. But it is a difficult spot, of course, as you can imagine, one with many challenges and no doubt much opposition to come. So Jerry is available for some meetings. He still needs help in getting closer to a full support level, and certainly he would appreciate a call if someone would like to invite them to come to their church for a meeting. You know, everyone can pray for these families and their needs. We need to get laborers to the field. Then we also need to keep them on the field. But some may be interested in supporting one or more of these families, maybe with a regular gift or a monthly commitment to their ministry. Pastors out there, if you're listening, perhaps you would consider inviting one of these missionaries for a meeting or for a missions conference in your church. If so, you could give me a call here at area code 423-876-8150, and I'd be happy to talk with you about any one of these families and to get you in touch with them so you could talk with them about perhaps coming to your church at a suitable time for you. You know, there are huge Jewish communities here in American cities that need the gospel. That is also true in many major foreign cities, world-class cities, where there are very large Jewish populations that need to be reached. Will you help where you can? Will you perhaps consider inviting one of these missionaries to your church? Have a part in supporting people who are reaching Jewish people for the Lord Jesus Christ with the life-giving gospel message. We want to tell them your Messiah has come. He offers a perfect salvation to whosoever will, Jew and Gentile alike. And these missionaries are doing that job. We certainly thank you for your support of our missionaries, many of you who've given gifts and provided help for them. They really appreciate it. We appreciate not only your giving, but your prayers. And God will bless you as he blesses those who care about the Jewish people. Now let's turn to Jewish believer Brother Mark Oshman, with today's Bible message.
Welcome back to our broadcast. We have looked at principles for conquering bad habits. This is the ninth principle in the multi-part series. This axiom states, we lose our freedom to make choices when we yield to temptations. The statement should not imply that once a person commits sin, he can no longer escape the power of that sin. Individuals still retain the option of repenting of their sins and forsaking them. The statement does suggest, however, that an individual who habitually transgresses will find it increasingly difficult to break that power of that sin in his life. Perhaps a playground analogy can illustrate this principle. When a person climbs on top of a slide and begins to descend, his initial downward movement is minimal. That person might find it relatively easy to stop sliding down. The further down he travels, however, the faster he will go. That person will have greater difficulty stopping his descent. At some point, a point will arrive when that individual can no longer stop sliding, but has to continue moving until he hits the ground. Another apt comparison might involve a person parachuting for an airplane. After that person jumps, the only choice remaining to him would be how quickly he will fall to the ground. He can no longer climb back into the plane once he's left it. However, he can deploy a parachute and slow his descent to the ground, or refuse to deploy it and plummet to the earth. Sin can operate in similar ways. The deeper an individual falls into sin, the harder it becomes to escape from it. Furthermore, once people have decided to undertake sinful endeavors, they find it increasingly difficult to turn back. Consider the example set by the Pharaoh of the Exodus. When Moses and Aaron confronted him about releasing the captive Israelites, according to the sixth chapter of Exodus, the Pharaoh said, quote, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I know not the Lord, neither will I let Israel go," unquote. Moreover, the Pharaoh increased the workload upon the Israelites, mandating them to spend time gathering straw for their bricks, while insisting that they maintain the same rate of production. The Egyptian ruler had rejected God's command to free his captive people. Therefore, God hardened the heart of that Pharaoh. Some readers might then blame God for Pharaoh's continued obstinance. Yet, the narrative indicated that the Egyptian ruler had determined beforehand that he was going to resist God. God gave him many opportunities to repent, yet Pharaoh refused to do so. Finally, God gave him over to his hard-heartedness and to the consequences thereof. Paul depicted the consequences of this process in the first chapter of Romans. The apostle wrote about a generation that suppressed divine truth in unrighteousness. They turned away from God, embracing idolatry and engaging in wicked behavior. These decisions had negative consequences for them. Paul detailed what those consequences were. Quote, "Even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient," unquote. Note the regression that Paul described. Quote, "When they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened," unquote. The people Paul described, quote, "changed the truth of God into a lie, and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever," unquote. Paul added about this group that, quote, "they did not like to retain God in their knowledge," unquote. Each step in the downward spiral of that generation took these people further and further from God. After presenting a catalog of their sins, Paul capped off his analysis by remarking that these people, quote, "knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them," unquote. Yielding to fleshly indulgence and moral permissiveness naturally results whenever any culture or society repudiates God. Those who give in to temptation will reap the consequences of that surrender. Such consequences are entirely under the control of God. Furthermore, they cannot be avoided and are beyond calculation. In the sixth chapter of Galatians, Paul laid down the following principle, quote, "Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap," unquote. He added that, quote, "He that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting, unquote. Throughout the Old Testament, individuals affirmed the truth of that proposition. Job, for example, remarked that, quote, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same, unquote. In Proverbs chapter 22, Solomon wrote that, quote, he that soweth iniquity shall reap vanity, unquote. According to the 8th chapter of Hosea, God declared that the Jewish people, quote, have sown the wind, and they shall reap the whirlwind, unquote. However, in the 10th chapter of Hosea, God instructed them to do something different. Quote, sow to yourselves in righteousness, reap in mercy, unquote. Whatever type of material a person sows will determine the type of harvest that individual reaps. The consequences of yielding to sin cannot be calculated. Those who commit sin pay a heavier price for their transgression, a heavier price than they might have imagined they would have to pay. For example, David might not have contemplated the results of his adultery with Bathsheba, yet that transgression cost him dearly. It resulted in discord among his family members. It cost him the lives of some of his sons. It cost him the respect of his peers, and evoked contempt from the enemies of God. In accordance with his own judgment, rendered in connection with the man with the one ewe lamb, in accordance with his own judgment, David paid multifold for his extramarital dalliance. Judas Iscariot may not have expected his betrayal of Jesus Christ to cost him so dearly. Perhaps he thought that the Lord would thwart any attempt made to arrest him, or that the other apostles would successfully intervene in such a manner. If so, subsequent events demonstrated the error of his assumptions. When he came to realize the consequences of the horrendous decision he had made, Judas Iscariot had a change of heart. According to Matthew chapter 27, he brought back to the chief priests and elders the 30 pieces of silver they had paid him. When Judas Iscariot told them, quote, I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood, unquote, they replied, quote, what is that to us? See thou to that, unquote. Judas Iscariot's despair over his betrayal drove him to commit suicide. The consequences of giving in to temptation are entirely in God's hands. As Solomon put it in the 5th chapter of Proverbs, quote, the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings, unquote. God will frequently allow those who sin to experience in full the evil effects of their deed. Again in Proverbs chapter 5, Solomon quoted that a sinner's, quote, own iniquity shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be holden with the cords of his sin. He shall die without instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray, unquote. In the 7th chapter of Proverbs, Solomon related the story of a person he referred to as, quote, a young man void of understanding, unquote. This person allowed temptation to lead him astray. The young man journeyed, quote, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night, unquote. He encountered, quote, a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart, unquote. She made him a proposition, quote, come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves, unquote. The woman told the youth that the good man of the house, presumably her husband, had left home on a business trip and was not going to return on that day. Solomon remarked that, quote, with her much fair speech she caused him to yield, with the flattering of her lips she forced him, unquote. He compared that youth to an ox headed for the slaughter and to a bird entrapped by a snare. Once the young man had yielded to the woman's pleas and followed her, he had forfeited his freedom and began his descent into ruin. Proverbs 7 concluded with a warning by Solomon, quote, let not thine heart decline to her ways, go not astray in her paths. For she hath cast down many wounded, yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death, unquote. Thank you for listening to our program. Please come back for our final lesson relating to principles for conquering bad habits.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee, 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150, or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.